Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie,
yeah,
how was the weekend? Big CrossFit weekend for you?
Yeah, it was a good weekend.
You got maybe certified to be level two?
Maybe, if I pass the test.
Pass the test?
Well, time will tell.
What was one of the questions that was hard?
I can't say the questions.
You're not? It's top secret?
Yeah, you're not allowed to say the
questions.
You're
not allowed to say the questions?
Really?
Wow, that's hardcore stuff happening.
Yeah.
Did it involve, do you have to do any like burpees? How many burpees can you do in a minute?
Yeah, that was the whole test.
Was that the test?
That was the whole test.
That's what I think it was. Well, today's going to be a fun show. We got with us Jason Holland and Gavin Lindemann with Holland IT. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Well, Jason, why don't we start with you since your name's on the top of the billboard here. Tell us about Holland IT. How are you serving folks?
Well, you know, I started Holland IT about 15 years ago because I saw a segment of the Atlanta population that was pretty underserved, that was nonprofits and arts organizations, and that to the day is still our core business. And that's really the reason I'd been in corporate IT for, you know, 10 years before that. And while that was fun and interesting, I didn't feel very fulfilled. So I wanted to start giving back a little bit. So between me and my wife, we had a lot of contacts in the nonprofit world. And I just sort of started reaching out to those people and asking, you know, what they were doing for IT and how they were doing. And almost invariably, they were doing awful and needed a lot of help. So that was sort of the impetus to start Holland IT.
So now when you're working with these type firms, are they nonprofits in the sense that they're charities for like medical kids, or are they like the arts? Like nonprofit is such a broad category.
It is. Yeah. I mean, we have a pretty broad spectrum of clients, all from theaters. Like an example that some of the listeners might know would be Dad's Garage Theater. Mm-hmm. So we've got arts. We also have Actors Express, which is, you know, another theater here in town.
Sure.
All the way to the Women's Resource Center for Domestic Violence has been a client before. We also have...
But like some hospitals now are nonprofits. Like, are you involved in some kind of things where like the HIPAA and those kind of securities or IT concerns or cybersecurity like that, as opposed to, you know, Dad's Garage, if someone has the list of improvers, I don't know. If
right.
That's as dire of a...
No, actually, that's a good point. We, generally, larger organizations carry their own internal IT. Mm-hmm. And we generally serve a population that's going to be a smaller organization that can't carry their own internal. So the situations, you know, where we see HIPAA a lot is with a lot of our clients that are therapists or... you know, I think we have a couple of small medical... But for the most part, you know, that's where we see those sort of things is in that area. So for the most part, we don't work with big hospitals or anything like that. We're usually top out at medium businesses around the largest we have is about 80 to 90 workstations, mm-hmm. somewhere in that area.
And then the type of services you provide are what?
Well, really, soup to nuts in terms of IT. So, you know, we can go in there and do desk-side support, you know, for just people's workstations. We can go and build them a website. We can go in there, do their office setup so we can run cabling and their network infrastructure, get them phones, you know, pretty much across the board.
So
anything that has office IT.
So everything from, like, set up a VoIP system to get them on the cloud, maybe they're not on the cloud? Are some of them not on the cloud at first?
Absolutely, yeah. We're still seeing, I mean, cloud adoption, especially in the for-profit sector, is fairly high. We're still seeing a lot of nonprofits that still are working under an older paradigm, servers in the office, mm-hmm. you know, infrastructure that's in the office. And that's one of our main philosophies is to get that out of the office as much as possible to lower our cost of ownership, increase reliability, make sure that there's good backups, that sort of thing. So
right. Whereas if they are having to handle that internally with devices that are in their office, then they're relying on human beings to make backups.
You got it. And that's the one thing that you know, I drill into all of our folks here is that, you know, if you rely on humans, you're not getting reliability.
That must be an interesting conversation.
It is, generally, because, I mean, that's one of the things that people don't really understand is just how critical backup is to a small business or a small organization.
Right.
Just, I mean, how very quickly things can go south and really destroy an organization if you don't have good backup, if everything goes wrong. And sometimes everything goes wrong.
And it's funny because the companies that have leaned into cloud and rely on cloud, they don't even think about that anymore, right? Where these companies that aren't in the cloud, that's something they got to do before they leave. Somebody's hitting the backup button or
absolutely. And we're, you know, we're a big fan of leveraging the cloud, but even so, we don't even trust them 100%. So we have the rule of three for backups, that we like to see it backed up in three places, mm-hmm. if it is important to you. So even though you may have a lot of your data in the cloud, we often still back that up for several reasons. You know, I mean, it's not likely that Google's going to go out of business tomorrow, but who knows? Maybe their terms of service change.
Right.
Or there's some other issue that keeps them from getting their data quickly. So maybe if we have another backup that's on site as well, we can pull that down and get them going faster.
So you still rely on something on site?
Yes, generally speaking. Yeah.
Because they're already used to doing that anyway.
Yeah. And the things, at least the devices that we use in these days, are so much easier to deal with. And we often provide the ability, or one of the services that we do is to monitor those devices too for the organization. Mm-hmm. So again, still they don't have to deal with it, but we could maybe log into it once a month, make sure it's all the way updated, right, that it's backing up and that sort of thing. And that provides a really low cost safety level for them. It gives them one more layer of backup.
Right, because if their donor list goes away,
exactly,
now what do they do?
Think about that.
Right.
I mean, if you're a nonprofit that relies solely on donors and that suddenly disappears, what
now
are you going to do at that point? You might be able to cobble something together from some emails or, you know, but I mean, at the very least, you're going to be down for weeks and months.
Right.
And
it's life or death for some of these organizations.
And these nonprofits are living hand to mouth anyway. I mean, there's a reason they don't carry an onboard IT staff. Instead, they don't have the budget for
it. Right.
So the minute you introduce problems like that, you're going to have a lot of trouble.
Now, what is what's the impetus to get in contact with your firm? Did something bad happen usually, or it's time to grow up, or they have a board member that's heard about you? What's your normal point of entry in one of these new accounts?
You know, we've grown so much in the last couple of years that the way that people are reaching us is changing a good bit. Generally, over the course of the company, it's been word of mouth, because the nonprofit and arts organization is fairly close knit. I mean, a lot of people know each other. So, you know, it was a lot of word of mouth, a lot of board members that talk to other board members and that sort of thing. Generally, the situation that we find is there's almost invariably a life cycle of these organizations, even a small business too, that it starts out, someone is the IT person in the organization because either the software was on their desk or they had a son who
right.
knew a little bit about computers. And they start doing that because the organization's small and it's usually not very complicated. And then as the organization grows, it very quickly becomes unmanageable. And usually we get the call right at the point where things are starting to become unmanageable, or
a typical first thing that becomes unmanageable?
What's a good example, Gavin? Probably
Gavin Lindemann, jump in here. You're the brains behind the operation. What's
there
your
you
role?
Go.
That's what I like to tell them. I would say a huge example for us would be something that might seem small at first that could become quite large, like QuickBooks. So a lot of clients were using a desktop version of QuickBooks. That's been a piece of software that almost every business uses.
Right.
And
but you have to update that.
You have to update it, and it can be very simple for one person to use, but suddenly your organization is larger, and you need four users to get in there and start doing invoices. And how do you do that? And it's very easy for a client to understand how it works at a very basic level, but the second they have to step beyond that, it becomes very complicated, and someone like us would step in. But what really happens there is then we'll come on site and we'll see the QuickBooks issue and fix the QuickBooks issue. And then you look around, you start asking questions, and we start doing a full assessment. And you'll find out that there are always knobs that you can turn to make things run smoother and faster, whether they're using old network equipment that slows down the whole network, whether they have their security set up right. Maybe their website doesn't have an SSL certificate, and when a client goes to it, it gives them a big warning message before they get on the website, and it's not encrypting their data. There's a million things that needs to be done to make sure that your nonprofit or business is running properly from an IT perspective. And the only real way to find that out is to have someone whose job it is to find that information, sit down and go through your entire business from end to end and find those issues so that they can start correcting them.
Now, from the nonprofit standpoint, where can you draw the lines of delineation between I have IT issues like my CRM, some of these cloud-based platforms that I'm utilizing to run my business, and then my website, where I got a person that I want to go to the website and make a donation. So the delineation between my web stuff and my IT stuff, do you handle all of that? Is that a turnkey thing? So you're helping me from the website side, where somebody can input their name and then they go to a secure place to do their credit card or to join a mailing list. Like, do you do that all the way through?
Yep.
To send out emails and newsletters?
We do that all. And it's interesting that you talk about
that. Because not every IT organization, they have a kind of a hard line.
Correct. And we find that organizations that separate those two things tend to have them not work very well. Because those things should be very intertwined. You want that data from your website to end up in your CRM that you're using. You want all of that information to be in one central location. As you separate that data, it actually becomes harder for that organization to use that data effectively. So a lot of times when we come into an organization, they may just need an IT service from us, but then when we start talking about their website and what that website does for them, we open up that path and say, well, let us do it all, because if we're doing it all, we're going to make sure it all works together properly.
So you become kind of their chief technical officer?
Yes.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a holistic approach. You know, going in there and not saying, you know, hey, we're just going to fix your phone like a phone vendor might be. But really coming in and
but
saying...
But you might fix their phone.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. Right. I mean, it that could be the reason that they called us, was that their phones weren't reaching a certain place or whatever. So we'll go in there and say that, and then we'll look around and say, you know, here are the other ways that we can make you more productive and make your just daily lives easier.
So now, but once you get into the realm of helping with their website, then now you're touching their marketing. Now you're touching a lot of another aspect of their business, which usually isn't in the scope of work for an IT organization.
Yes, that is the case. And that's why we work with a lot of other companies to do that sort of thing.
Okay.
We don't have all of this
in-house,
but we have tons of partners that we work with that will, you know, do marketing and PR and user experience and bring those subject matter experts in under the umbrella of our consulting and say, look, here's what we can do for you. As a one-stop shop, you only have to talk to us. You don't have to talk to 20 different people. And we'll be the people that'll sit down and explain it and make it sound like a human to you.
Right.
And let us speak to the geeks, you know.
So the relationship the client has is with Holland. And then if they need a marketing automation expert, Holland finds the marketing automation, and then they're the ones who are yelling at them and dealing with the problems.
Exactly.
I'm yelling at Holland, and mm-hmm. Holland's yelling at the people doing the work.
You got it.
And I mean, I don't have to educate myself because I have a good relationship with Holland.
Absolutely. That's the way that it works.
And then you mentioned the target is nonprofits. Are they only Atlanta-based, or are they all over the country?
No, and I mean, you know, we're not in entirely nonprofit, and we do have a fair amount of small business, so I don't want to give that short shrift, but we've got them all over the U.S. We've got some folks out on the West Coast, some in New York,
D.C.,
yeah.
So Michigan. How are they finding Holland out of all the, I mean, I guess there's not a lot of people that are doing the whole combination soup to nuts from anything technology, anything that is technological is under your domain, kind of, right?
For the most part, yeah, when you think about that. I mean, and it is a pretty broad spectrum. I mean, but generally people out of town, again, it's word of mouth. You know, we have some folks out on the West Coast that are in the entertainment business. You know, we have therapists in Washington, D.C. that heard through us through other therapists in Atlanta. You know, so there's a lot of that. You know, we get a fair amount of traffic through to just on organic Google searches.
Mm-hmm. So when you're doing a Google search, what are the keywords you're putting out there? Because it has to be broader than IT, right?
Well, consulting is a very big one. That we are IT a consulting. Firm, yeah. And then just general technology terms. So, you know, we try to post blogs on our website every week with different technology needs. So whether it's about security breaches or GDPR has been in the news a lot recently. Just making sure that we're staying relevant on that technology and that our website has those keywords and content relevant to that.
So IT is kind of the point of entry, but the scope of the relationship might broaden because once you get in there and you start having a relationship, you're like, hey, we might be able to help you with this, or we might be able to help you with that.
And I think IT as a whole has changed too. You know, we think about this physical infrastructure, but so much of it is in the cloud. It matters less that we're physically in the same space as our clients. Like a client in Michigan, Jason went out and set up their physical infrastructure once, and we've been able to handle their entire organization since then because we can remote into computers. The services are in the cloud that we can access remotely. There's just not a huge need for us to physically be on site in the same way that you might have had to 5 or 10 years ago.
So do you work with kind of multi-unit organizations that maybe they have a base of operations in one place, but they have kind of, I don't want to say franchises, but like say a franchisor, and then they have franchises, and then you can work with all of, because it's a similar system in every location?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, a really good example of that is we have some self-storage places. Mm-hmm. So we work with a management company that, you know, is the umbrella organization for all of these self-storage places. We go in there, and it's a huge, huge market, especially here in Atlanta with so many people moving back into the city.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of boring businesses that you drive by every day and you don't realize how much money those things just generate and how profitable they are.
They are printing money.
Right.
Printing money.
Right.
And one of our clients is one of the largest ones in Atlanta over in Brookhaven. And basically the idea is that we can go in there, their investors can say, hey, we're going to open up a new place in Dalton, which was the one that they did just recently.
Right.
You know, we go up there. We do, again, everything soup to nuts. We go in, put in the network infrastructure, get an ISP for them.
You're like managing the putting in the cable and all the stuff.
Absolutely. Everything from the ground up. We go up there when they're putting, you know, before the walls even go up, get the cabling.
And you're deciding where the outlet is?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's that detailed at that point. Then you get up there and then you start thinking about, well, we need a website. We need voice over IP phones because we're not going to use copper these days. You know, that's the old style telephones. And we can go in there and say, look, this is what we can do. It's almost like a template for these people that you can just roll out and say, well, here's the website. We even kind of clone the website. You know, and then
right,
we put
so it
new
has
content
a similar
in.
Look and feel, and
yeah,
and
of course,
is similar.
Right? Of course, we brand it to the
location,
you know, the colors and and the sign and all that kind of stuff. But everything, the basic things, taking care of things, having, you know, the managers at the store, being able to use the software. It's one type of everything. So you could even have someone from another location come over, train the new manager on all the stuff, and boom. Now, so much easier.
Now, does your work, you mentioned kind of the website and the customization, is that, would it kind of go through, like say, I don't know if they even have this, but in some organizations, they might have a website and social media presence. Like, could you manage their social media presence?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that Gavin works with.
That's one of your superpowers, Gavin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll do social media. We'll do Facebook, Google AdWords.
So you can
Instagram,
do the paid.
Twitter.
You can do organic. Mm-hmm. You can help them with the content strategy. So you're handling all kind of anything that touches their business through the web or through kind of any electronic means.
Yeah. You got it. One of the initiatives that Gavin's been working on is, and what a lot of people don't know even exists is the nonprofit Google AdWords campaign.
Yeah, so Google AdWords grants, Google give a nonprofit. Now, there are some requirements that your nonprofit has to meet, but they'll give a nonprofit $10,000 a month in an AdWords budget to generate ads for their website. So that can be a huge donation
driver. So like a credit?
Yeah, it's a credit for up to $10,000 a month.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's an enormous amount of money. But that being said, AdWords is a very complex piece of software, and to be able to even spend $10,000 a month.
Right, it's not that easy.
Right, it's not just like, write a check and you're done.
Yeah, and you don't write down 5 AdWords.
And you walk away.
Right, it involves really developing a strategy and executing that plan over a long period of time. But it's such a positive impact for nonprofits that can invest in that. For very little upfront investment, they can get this huge advertising budget.
Now, what's some low-hanging fruit that these small companies aren't taking advantage of that maybe they can do themselves?
Really, the cloud. I mean, if you're working on an older system where you have maybe, you know, a mail email server in your office, or if you're using, you know, there, a lot of companies and organizations too will use the email that is provided maybe by the web host. Mm-hmm. You know, either GoDaddy's email or Network Solutions or whoever they, you know, are using for their website. That stuff generally tends to be pretty low featured and not very reliable.
So there's better solutions?
Absolutely. The biggest thing I could tell you, if you're a nonprofit or an arts organization, is to get on G Suite. I mean, G Suite or Office 365, both of those are basic, you know, one is Google's platform and the other is Microsoft's, right? Between those two, G Suite has a nonprofit pricing, which is zero a month. If you're a 501c3, then you get G Suite for free, which means you get Gmail.
No matter how many users.
Wow. You also get unlimited storage. You get all of the bells and whistles that they have for you. Office 365, I don't think is free.
It's like $3 a user, though.
Yeah, $3 a user a month. And, if, you know, of course, with that, you're getting the Office suite. So, I mean, that is the industry standard. So, I mean, that's still great value.
Right.
So between those two things, I mean, if I was starting in a nonprofit, I mean, that to me seems like a no-brainer. Immediately go to those people, you know, right. Have those take that part
I think,
taken care of.
Another good option is TechSoup.
Mm-hmm.
TechSoup is a website made for nonprofits for technology needs. Mm-hmm. So it's a great place that after you're actually a 501c3, you can go on there and there's some technology. They have laptops and desktops, so you have some hardware for sale and also software at discounted price. So maybe you need the Adobe Suite. You can get that at discounted price for nonprofits. So
enormously discounted.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of simple stuff you can do just by being a nonprofit to make sure that you're really capitalizing on the programs in place for you.
Now, that's a good example for our listeners that are in business. Now, I know that you said that you don't only do nonprofits, but that's a niche that you serve.
Sure.
By kind of immersing yourself in that niche, you kind of learn about these resources that the average person who's just superficially has done one website wouldn't know because they're superficially doing it. But because you're kind of spend a lot of time in that world, you learn about things like this, and then you can really serve your clients at a much deeper level.
Absolutely. That's what, you know, having 15 years of experience in this. I mean, actually, for me, I started very early with Wang Laboratories back in 1993. Yes, you know, that was my first. That was my first
T-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. So I worked over on the clock tower on 41, and I remember it was a very early version of PowerPoint, and I was doing PowerPoint support. Microsoft had, contracted that out to Wang. So at this point, Wang wasn't even making anything anymore. I think they used to be, like, in the 70s and 80s, like, all kinds of computers.
Like hardware, right?
Hardware and stuff, right. And so they had kind of transitioned over to this, you know, vendor role for Microsoft. And so I started in 93 and then went on to work at Mindspring Enterprises, which was a very early ISP here in town.
Right. Right. And one of the kind of niche players as well. They were there before then Earthlink bought
them. Absolutely. Yep. So I left there right when Earthlink took over. And so that was, you know, I don't know how long. When is 93 to now? I mean, there's experience there that allows you to kind of, just like you said, bring all these different topics in and be able to say to someone, you know what, I heard about this thing and we can try that. Or, you know, just like Gavin said earlier, keeping up with very current stuff, you know, maybe even bleeding edge stuff that may not be ready for prime time consumption for some of these organizations, but keeping an eye on it and saying, you know, when that matures, that'd be perfect for this person.
Right. So now, do you help if the organization, a lot of these are kind of lean and they lean on open source software, do you help them manage that as well?
Yeah. I mean, we don't see that as much, to be honest, at least in that sector, mainly because of the lack of support there is for open source. We use open source products in our office for sure. You know, there's Linux boxes and this, that, and the other. And I personally love the open source model for a lot of reasons. One of them being security, which is sort of not, it's not something that you think of right off.
It's counterintuitive.
It's counterintuitive. Exactly. That's the word I was looking for. But the thing is that with so many people's eyes on the code, it's very easy to see anyone doing something nefarious.
Right.
Where if it's all inside one department in one company and it's very secret,
there could be a sneaky person.
Absolutely. So we love the idea of open source, and we'd love to see it get a lot more traction. Mm-hmm. We don't see a lot of it right now, but it is incrementally getting more and more.
So, what do you need more of right now?
What do we need more of right now? Well, I think probably what we need more of is just more knowledge. I mean, getting information out to people. I mean, the biggest thing that we deal with these days, at least in the home sector for us, is security issues. So getting people knowledgeable about what is, you know, the threats that are out there. The one that kills me the most is this one that goes around where supposedly Microsoft is calling you because they found something on your computer.
They call you on the phone?
Yeah. So it actually is. So it's actually targeted at older people for the most part.
Right.
And what happens is you get a phone call and they say, this is Microsoft. Right. And we detected a problem on your computer.
Right.
And if you go here, we can show you exactly what it is. And what they do is they open up a certain part of Windows that always has some warnings in it. Mm-hmm. And they point to this warning and say, see, there's something wrong here.
Right.
And there's really nothing wrong. And then what they do is they say, if you go to this website and download this piece of software, it'll fix that problem. And in, up until that point, they didn't have a problem, but the minute they download that, they do, right? So the idea is trying to keep people knowledgeable, not only home users like that, but workers and organizations, realizing that there's no way in the world that Microsoft could ever know what's on your computer. It just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And if they could, they certainly wouldn't call you up about it, right. You know?
Well, I mean, we could laugh about it, but I mean, the people that are being victimized by this, they just don't know. I mean,
exactly.
They think the computer is like their refrigerator. You know, you turn it on and it works every time and everything is doing what it's supposed to. It's a very complex machine and a lot of moving parts. So there's always a problem, and usually it's their fault when there's a problem. So when something comes up or they're told something is wrong, they think something's really wrong.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it is this magical box, right? So it's easy to believe,
right?
When someone tells you something,
and
when you don't understand
it, and you don't understand the context of things, you're like, well, it says it's an error.
Right, exactly. You're exactly right. So, I mean, it's not the fault of the people that much, but it's our duty and our responsibility to try to let people know as much as possible. And, you know, that's some of the things that we do education-wise on our website and this sort of thing, blog posts and stuff. And just part of, you know, when we go in, we like to have, like, a training seminar at the end of any project. And we're like, you know what, if this smells funny... It probably is funny.
Right.
You know, drop us a line and say, is this kosher or whatever?
We've been seeing recently there's been a very common email threat going around where someone will try to spoof the email of, like, the director of a company. And what they'll do is they'll ask their employees to go out and buy, like, gift cards. And then try to get those gift cards.
But it looks like it's coming from the CEO or some executive.
And sometimes it's done better than others where it's just one character off in the email name and they've copied the signature. And other times it's a totally different email. But just making sure everyone's aware. And sometimes it's as simple as putting in place a policy that your director is never going to email you and ask you to buy something. That's not how we would
do business, right?
And so making sure that the whole organization understands that and has a standard in place to make sure that they're able to handle a situation.
Yeah, we had a guest on here talk about one of those, I guess, spoofing, where they saw on social media that the executive was on vacation, right? Because
people post that these days on
Facebook or whatever. Hey, I'm on vacation. And then, so then they sent a note to an executive and saying, hey, I'm on vacation and I need that list of all the blah, blah, blah. Can you send that?
I bet it worked.
It worked.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just people, you know, they take this little kernel of public knowledge, but they don't realize it's public knowledge because they think they're only talking to their friends.
Right. Exactly.
And then leverage that. And then people... that's the thing. People are cynical about human beings, but we're pretty trustworthy. And if somebody says do something, we do it a lot of times.
And so many of these issues are all based around social engineering versus someone actually hacking your website.
It's not some 14-year-old kid in a basement doing this. I mean, it's the people that are doing this. This is their job.
Right.
They're professionals.
And just like he said, there's not this supercomputer trying to break into your machine. They're using public knowledge.
Right.
You know, social engineering.
Right.
And you're seeing that's what happened with a lot of the hacks that we saw on the national level with, you know,
right,
the Russians.
With these large organizations.
Absolutely.
And big bureaucracies, it's easier to happen because there's a lot more humans that they can be pinging to see if one of them just, all it takes is one of them to screw
That's
up.
That's exactly what happened with the huge Sony hack that happened last year.
Right. So they can send a million emails that everybody else is deleting, but one person says yes to, and now they're in.
Yep.
Because the security is actually really good these days.
Right.
I mean, it's really difficult to break into, you know, modern computers.
Right.
I mean, with the encryption, with VPN, with the different types of security that we have, it's pretty difficult. But it's not very difficult to get a human to give up information if you work it right.
Well, there was another consultant we had in here that he had a person, a human being, that would walk around a big company. And his badge said, this is a fake security ID, right? So he had this badge on that says that I'm not who I say I am, basically. And then he would go up to people and go, hey, I'm with IT. Can I get your password? I got to do a check your system. And they're like, you know, my password's password. And like, here you go.
I'm not surprised at all, honestly.
My favorite email is when you do need to get a password from a user and then they call you.
And they go, what's my password?
Well, no, they'll say, hey, was this real? Always
warms
my heart when they're like, yep.
That's the thing.
That's what you want.
You want that,
exactly.
Right? Don't you want this? Hey, I got this email. Is this legit?
Absolutely.
You take that all day long.
Yeah, that's what we know you're doing the right thing then.
Exactly. Right? I mean, because, you know, at least in our organization, for that sort of thing, we don't even charge.
Right. That should be free.
Exactly. Because that saves me from having to deal with something on the weekend or whatever, right? But can you imagine what the opposite end is in terms of cost? You know, if they are hacked or whatever.
Right.
Think about what we talked about earlier. If someone got in there and erased their data and everything. Right.
Or held it hostage, how much of that is going
on?
This
encryption happens now where they'll get in and they'll encrypt every file.
Right, they lock down your thing and say, send me some Bitcoin and then I'll give it back to you, maybe.
Yep.
Then you have me on the weekend making a Bitcoin account trying to
buy it. Exactly. It gets expensive quick. So, I mean, just taking that 5 minutes and saying...
Yeah, that's good marketing to say, look, I'll do that for free. If you send me these, it's unlimited for that.
Totally. And that's what we do. I mean, we tend to, just because of our market, we want to help these people.
Right, and they're creatives, a lot of them, where the IT isn't their first language.
Absolutely. You know, and I think, going back full circle to what we first talked about, there's just not a lot of people out there that are doing that for this sector.
Right, and there's not a lot of people serving that kind of underserved group.
Totally, totally.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more and have a more substantive conversation, what's the website?
The website's www.hollandit.biz.
Holland, HOLLAND IT.biz.
You got it.
Well, Jason and Gavin, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.